Morning. Welcome to Medicine on Call. I think today it's going to be kind of a mix of a show. There's a lot of updates that need to go on. One is Ebola, one is the enterovirus, and the last piece would be about Obamacare and the fact that with all everything that's been going on, we've actually reached the one-year anniversary and passed it. And we've been told that it's a success, and there was a poll that came out recently that implied that it was definitely a success, and I think that needs to be addressed. So let's start off with Ebola, because every day there's something new going on with it. And the nurse who recently came down with it in Spain, as well as the cameraman who came down with it without any direct contact with anybody, I think changes the nature of the narrative. They've been telling us all along that it's not passed unless you come in contact with bodily fluids, that there's no way it could ever mutate and become airborne, and there's no way that it could come to the United States. Every single hospital in our country is on heightened alert and able to protect us from Ebola and treat patients. There's a lot of absolutes that have been pronounced, and I think common sense dictates that you can't state things as if they're absolutes, but you really don't know a lot about this virus. Yes, it's been around since the late 1970s. Yes, it's been it's attacked various African countries and it's gone away very quickly. But I think anybody who's really watching this can say with some confidence that this is not the same presentation of the virus as it was in the last episodes of these attacks, of these outbreaks, excuse me. So for CDC, for everybody to get on TV, even people from Texas who are saying that there's no risk of anybody getting it after this patient zero went to the Dallas hospital, I think is disingenuous. And what makes me more concerned is that it's making people stand down. I think the nature of things of human beings is to put their heads in the sand and not want to face things that are dangerous. And if you're given license to do so by the powers and the powers who are in authority right now, I think it lulls people into thinking that they can do whatever they want and this is not going to be a problem. And this is the very time when you should be the most vigilant, when we have the window but this could be shut down, and we're not doing it. I don't know, Dave, if you heard this, but the young woman who's, I think she's the niece of the patient who entered Dallas Hospital, who took care of him before he was readmitted, was okayed. It's now 7 days after exposure. She was okayed to go back to work as a nursing assistant. Did you hear that?
No, I hadn't.
I mean, unbelievable. If the incubation period is up to 21 days, and this woman took care of him. She wrapped him in bedclothes, in blankets. She cleaned the towels that he soiled. She's been in direct contact with this virus, and she's been cleared to go back into a healthcare setting. And she's one of the most high risk people. If what they said is true, and her exposure, she admitted that her exposure was to take care of him in the home that weekend. That's crazy. I mean, that's just...
Well, you heard the story on how the cameraman got it.
Actually, no, I didn't.
Oh.
How did they say he got it?
Oh, he got it. Now, this will blow your mind. He got it because he was pressure washing a car of a person that had died in the car with Ebola. And he was pressure washing the inside and outside of the car, and evidently some of the virus must have splashed up on his face.
What? No, I didn't hear that at all. But that would explain. I mean, it's droplets, because once you aerosolize something, the blood particles, and if you inhale them or they enter your eye, you swallow them, that would be a definite exposure, and that's how you would get it. And also, the people who were cleaning, I mean, this is just, you couldn't make this up if you really tried. After the person went to the hospital, the family lived in the same rooms, the same environment with the dirty soiled linen for at least a couple of days. I understand he threw up on the pavement outside the where they lived. That sat there for several days, and then they had some poor janitor pressure wash the sidewalk. I mean, there's pictures of this where the lady's walking by. An innocent person is walking by the area as somebody is pressure washing the asphalt. That is crazy. So if the cameraman got it that way, potentially you just put a neighborhood and at least that lady walking by and the person doing it at risk without protection, by the way. He didn't have anything on
but his regular
work clothes.
Yeah.
What is wrong? I mean, this is not normal.
Well, you know, I don't want to get into this particularly because you wonder all of these stories, and it's like if you go on the internet, you can get any story you want to just about.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, maybe there's more to this than meets the eye. You know, this is a UN type thing. There was a report out today, and I take it with a grain of salt to a degree, except for what you're saying. Is that, you know, the whole Ebola thing is a fraud and built up to be a UN thing that plays into the fact of Agenda 21. Now, that all sounds like a conspiracy theory. However, you know, just like you're saying, this thing is, if you put it in the baddest of the bad cases or scenarios, then, like you said, that whole apartment complex would have been blocked off. You wouldn't have had a guy out there pressure washing the street and the sidewalks and stuff. I mean, the whole thing is beginning to smell a bit.
It's not logical.
No.
I mean, I'm reading this book called The Hot Zone, which is amazing. It's just, you can't put this book down, and it's about the history of Ebola, and especially how it was. There was a research facility in Maryland, Fort Detrick, where the virus got out amongst monkeys, and it appeared that it very, very likely that it was spread by aerosol, either sneezing or just being around each other. It definitely wasn't direct contact, and they ended up having to destroy the whole lab. The whole lab, basically, with the monkeys in it. If that, and the way they described the amount of precautions that you had to take just to handle the virus, something called a biocontainment level 4, where you went into, I mean, you put on your spacesuits, negative pressure room, triple gloving, taping all of the possible entry routes for this virus, you know, so it couldn't even get in to touch your skin. And then they're talking about you can just live with it, go to the store, you can be semi-quarantined where you're allowed to just be watched while you still go to work and do everything else. It makes no sense. I mean, this is a killer virus, 50 to 90% kill rate. Don't tell me that you can, and Dr. Ori and I mentioned this last week, that if you don't show the symptoms, you're not able to pass it. Even the person who first identified Ebola, the doctor who first found it, said that there are people who can carry it. It means you can have it, not be sick, just like the enterovirus, for example. You can have it, not be sick, and actually pass it. And this is a virus. From what they're telling us, it's acting like no other virus in the history of the world, which is ridiculous. HIV, flu, rotavirus, every virus that we come in contact with that we know, acts the same way. You can pass it to each other without knowing. Especially HIV, you can pass it sexually because it's in body fluid. Don't tell why all of a sudden this virus can't be passed that way. Doesn't make a lot of sense, you know? But it's all about making us put our guard down, stand down, while they supposedly are going to take care of us. But everything that they're doing makes no scientific sense. It's as if they want us to go through the population. And Agenda 21 and UN issues are one avenue of this. The other is martial law. You know, remember, there are executive orders in place, and even Connecticut now, the governor has passed a state executive order that puts them under quarantine. He has the power to do whatever he wants and can probably quarantine whomever he likes. That's what's going on with the executive order for the federal side. So what happens if they decide you look sick and they're just going to take you in and hold you indefinitely without any real, you know, proof? While they know people who have it, they refuse to quarantine. And that doesn't kind of, you know, does that make sense to you?
No.
No, there's something wrong with this picture, and I can't figure it out why. And it's not just the United States. You know, it's gone on in Europe as well.
Well, you know, the other thing I heard today was that, you know, we hear these numbers of the number that have died in Liberia and the number that have died and so forth and so on. And yet we haven't heard the number of the people that have had it and gotten over it. It's been made to sound like if you get it, you die, particularly if you're in West Africa. But evidently that's not
the
case.
No, I mean, it might be the case. Of course, we don't know. But we do know that their doctors are leaving their stations in Liberia and Sierra Leone. We know that they're fled the country, that there are only 200, I read there was only 250,000 doctors in the whole country of Sierra Leone. That's certainly not enough to take care of a population as sick and as labor-intensive as a disease like Ebola will cause. So that means that people, and they've been quarantined to their homes at some points. You can't take care of people when they're locked in their homes under quarantine. So this is like waiting for someone to just die and for this to burn out. That seems to be the strategy. It's certainly not taking care of them. And if you look at how the United States is ramping up their response, first of all, the pronouncement was really just a pronouncement. They have 200 people on the ground. They're supposed to have, God forbid, 3,000 to 4,000 coming. By the time they build these hospitals, which I think are going to give you 1,000 beds, maybe 1,700 beds, what is that supposed to accomplish when you've got millions of people potentially who are sick? Definitely thousands now. They're not even able to get into a hospital. This is window dressing, so I can't even understand how it's going to accomplish anything. And by the way, by the time they get it built, which is next end of this month, we hope, it's going to be a drop in the bucket. So what's the point, really, of the military going there? The WHO, you know, they promised money. Yeah, I think it was $400 million. Did it ever come? I mean, they're still complaining about not having protective gear. I mean, that's unconscionable. That's how you keep people on the health side from getting it. And they're not even protected still. So, I mean, there's a disconnect between what they say and what they're doing.
I understood, too, that there was a lack of protective gear, that they basically have already run out of it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you have $400 million, that should go a long way to providing enough protective gear for the people on the front, for the doctors and nurses on the front line. In one point, the nurses stopped working until they got protection. I mean, they demanded it because they had them still wearing, you know, some in instances, because they don't have the literal spacesuit, they must have just been wearing just maybe rubber gloves or something like that. It's just not appropriate. Something's wrong with this picture.
There is. With that, we're going to have to take a break and come back with Medicine on Call and Dr. Elena George right after this.
For years, Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center has been providing outstanding care to patients of all ages. They are dedicated to patient satisfaction and have been the recipient of the Georgia Otolaryngology Association Patient Satisfaction Award. They welcome any questions you may have about their services. Their practice includes treatment of asthma, allergies, sleep apnea, snoring, hearing impairments, and chronic sinus disease. Dr. Elena George is a board-certified ear, nose, and throat surgeon. Her training in New York has included training at Manhattan Eye, Ear, and Throat Hospital and Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. She believes in practicing both the art and science of medicine. All patients are seen by Dr. George. All treatment options are discussed, and time will be spent to answer all questions. Their office is located in Atlanta at 1776 Peachtree Road in Suite 260 North Tower, two blocks south of Piedmont Hospital. They are open Monday through Friday, 8:30 a.m. until 4 p.m. Additional details are available at www.peachtreeentcenter.com. At Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center, you can be confident that you are in good hands with their professional team.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on americaswebradio.com anytime you like.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. Before the break, we were talking about the disconnect between, you know, reality and what they call reality and what they say is reality. I mean, we're talking about 1984 things where it's what we say is reality. No matter how ridiculous it is, no matter how disconnected it is, something doesn't smell right. Something doesn't pass the smell test on this. I think Ebola is real. You know, I think this virus is real. You made a very interesting comment. The response to this doesn't appear, there's no urgency, there's no attention to detail. And that's troubling. If the CDC can say, well, you can go send your kid to school, we're just going to send out thermometers to test test whether your child is, whoever's coming to school may be affected. That's, and knowing that two children entered the school system and they were exposed literally to somebody with active Ebola doesn't make any sense to me at all, any more than the enterovirus issue does. I mean, last week we talked a bit about how it's known to be endemic in Central American countries. And let's go over that a little bit. Endemic means that it's been there for a long time. People have been affected by it. The population has seen the disease. We haven't. And they say that we haven't seen it for many years here. I don't remember ever. I don't think I've ever learned about that when I was taking microbiology. But be that as it may, if it existed and does exist in Central America, that means people have antibodies for it. That means, again, they can carry it, not look sick. But when they enter a different population like the United States where we don't have immunity to it, it can just go like wildfire through our population. And the thing from an epidemiological standpoint that doesn't make sense to me is how come it's just children getting this? You know, if it were like the flu, everybody gets it. At some point, a parent is going to get it. At some point, it's going to go through a workplace. That hasn't happened with this. It seems to be just young and school-aged children, which makes you think it has to be some sort of presentation where they're on the front line of getting it. And the only common denominator is it's school time now. And I don't know. Is it the people, because we don't know, again, where the illegal immigrant children have been dropped off? We do know that under our laws, any child, school-aged child who enters our country, whether they're legal or not, they have to be educated. So we know these children have been dropped off in every single public school system in our country. But because of, quote, privacy, we don't know where they are. So you just have to look at the outbreak now. It's in Georgia. It's in pretty much, I think, 48 states now, I think. Mm-hmm. And these children have been dropped off in every state in our country. So, you know, it makes you think. The question has to be raised, is that where this came from?
The other scary thing that I keep asking about, the folks that should know, are you being... is anything being said in your school or your nurses being made aware of it? Are they looking for any signs of it coming in? Are there anything coming from the central offices of large school districts saying, be cautious if someone shows a sign of this or sign of that, if any of the children have these symptoms? None of that's going on.
Exactly.
And what little bit of information we get off of our inept media, and you know, we hear how bad it is, and yet, and we've had our first death, a young boy, I think, 4 years old, and yet the schools aren't being notified or warned, or the schools that have nurses and or people that play like nurses, whatever. I don't know, Dr. George. Everything is crazy. I'm sorry, but I'm becoming cynical about everything and can't understand if, obviously, this thing is bad, the intravirus, yeah. But why aren't we putting up red flags all over the place?
You know, it's almost like there's a blackout, and the only way that we're getting information is funneled through the media. And various press conferences. But from a health standpoint, from a health care standpoint, you're right. We don't know anything. I've gotten no emails, no letters about how to handle any potential Ebola patient coming into my office, what to look for an enterovirus patient, a child that I might be seeing coming in with an upper respiratory infection or asthma, nothing. And that's from, you know, the medical societies have said nothing. The AMA has said nothing. There's something real. You know what? You know who you've not heard anybody, anything from is the Surgeon General. That's also incredible. Like, he doesn't exist. What's going on? I mean, it's like the whole healthcare system is in a stand-down mode. This is unprecedented for something that two things going on in our country right now from a healthcare perspective that are potentially will, if not infect, you know, mildly, but decimate the population, and we're not being told anything. And the thing that really troubles me is that not only is it a blackout, but there's false information that's going on. For anybody to say that, and I read this yesterday, it just floored me, this virus mutates very slow. The Ebola virus mutates very slowly. That's a lie. It mutates. There's about 400 mutations so far. It had to have mutated from the last presentation to now because it's jumped from one country to four countries. The incubation period has risen to 21 days. It's not as lethal as it used to be. It used to be 90% kill rate. Now it's down to 50 to 70%. There's a change. We have people who are now not direct contact because ultimately the cameraman who was pressure washing, that technically is not direct contact with the patient. It's indirect. The nurse, the one in Spain, apparently went and only saw the priest who had Ebola twice. One was, quote, to change his diaper. The other was to clean the room in protective gear, state-of-the-art protective gear each time. They still don't know how she got it. So we're talking now, it's not, you can safely say, I believe, that it's not direct only, that there's indirect contact as well. Even the airliners are saying that they shouldn't, it's not pressure wash, but they have some way of cleaning their cabin where they have to use compressed air to do it. They're telling their people not to do that because of potential health risks. It's very schizophrenic. In one hand, we're told, nothing to see here, move along. There's no way you can get this. It's very unlikely. And on the other hand, we're getting, you know, pronouncements. If you read closely, you know, you need to take precautions. Or the things that they're saying can never happen are happening every single day. And you're just supposed to ignore them like they don't exist. That's a problem. You know, it's not about alarming people. But ultimately, people get alarmed when things are not told to them. Like, they're treated like children. They can't get the tools to protect themselves. And now the question, I think you raised it, and I think it has to be asked, why? Who stands to gain from not really educating the population how to protect themselves? It won't be an epidemic of fear if people know certain things initially about how to protect themselves, how to protect their families. What, you know, one thing that people have to know, that if we do get into a situation where we get a lockdown and we can't leave our homes for whatever reason, you have to have food and water and supplies in your home. If you don't, you're going to be in the same situation as they are in Africa, where they were quarantined without any means of survival, really. They were just the clothes on their back. They may not have had food. There was one story of somebody leaving trying to get out of a quarantine zone because they were hungry. This potentially can happen anywhere of this virus breaks out. And the government would be going a long way to having people just do simple things like have a 3-week supply of food and water in your home. Have, you know, some first aid supplies that you can get to easily, that you don't have to leave your home. These are simple things. That's not going to alarm people, but it's going to help the whole system work better. Because if people aren't prepared, then you have a crisis situation where people start getting violent, they hurt each other. That's unnecessary. I mean, these are simple things, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. You know, unfortunately, people get, you're a prepper. Oh, you're this, you're that. No, you're just wise, and you make sense, and you can see ahead that the government's not going to take care of all of us. It can't take care of everybody.
It can't. You know, I would think the government would be happy, happiest clams, that people are actually doing the things to protect themselves. And there was a story on CNN last night where people are buying these hazmat suits. I forget the name. I think they're Vivek, or I can't remember the name of them. But they're literally buying them online, et cetera. And this is tragic. But some microbiologist gets on TV, and the host asked him, should people be doing this? You know, asking the question if people are kind of crazy for doing it. And he said, yes. I'm like, that's the last thing you should say. If someone wants to take care of themselves, it doesn't make them a bad person. It makes them awesome in my book because they're handling their business, because they are taking responsibility for their health. And the more individuals that do that, the government system, the whole system of health care, everything would work so much better. You can't have 300 million people in a panic mode, you know, rushing to a hospital that barely has enough supplies to take care of the people already in it. It's not going to work.
How many uses out of a hazmat suit can you get?
I think some of these are reusable, a couple, maybe two or three uses. But, you know, that's the difference between life and death, honestly. And there's actually a website that I went to where they're selling the kits for about $99 where you get the suit, respirator, gloves, pretty much everything you need, kind of a one-stop shop to get yourself set up. I think that's awesome.
For $99?
You know, they're not trying to rob. Yeah, it was $149, now it's $99.
Huh.
You go to naturalnews.com, that's where, you know, they're selling that. I think that's a great idea. And it's nothing wrong with being prepared. That's the problem. They're trying to demonize anybody who wants to prepare for themselves as if it's something counter to everybody else. As a matter of fact, it helps everybody. Every person that's prepared means that the people who aren't prepared can be taken care of. That's how it should be seen, and that's not how it's being represented. It's being represented as if you want to be proactive, there's something wrong with you. You're alarmist. You're trying to, you know, promote panic. It's PSYOP, honestly, and I don't understand that. Knowing what, if you look at the pictures in Africa, that's a problem because they don't have a system that's set up to help them from a health perspective. It's already overwhelmed. You see what overwhelmed looks like. And there's a chance here not to have that repeated. And they're trying to pacify people so that they don't ramp up now to take care of themselves. It's unconscionable. It's unnecessary, and I have a problem with that.
Well, you know, I was watching the news before I came into the office this morning, and there is no trust in government today. They were doing a thing on how people responded to the president on Ebola, and
yeah.
You know, they didn't trust what he was saying. You know, like they said, one of the statements was, "It's extremely unlikely."
Yeah.
You know, you can't make a statement like that and expect people to buy into it. The doctor at the CDC, I find very hard to buy into. Unfortunately, it's time for us to take another break. We'll be back with Medicine on Call right after this.
At Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center, they provide better quality care. They believe that excellent medical care is a right and not a privilege. They are concerned that the current economy has forced people to sacrifice their health. They have therefore reduced their prices to make it more affordable. They will continue to provide state-of-the-art care. They continue to believe that patient care counts above all else. Peachtree ENT Center, concierge medicine without the concierge price. Additional details are available at www.peachtreeentcenter.com. Call their office at 404-591-9100 to make an appointment or for more information. They are located in Atlanta at 1776 Peachtree Road Northwest, Suite 260 North Tower, two blocks south of Piedmont Hospital.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. Before the break, you were talking about the head of the CDC and how you had a little confidence in him. Gee, I wonder why. when there were stories that came out, you know, a few months ago, very recently, that they couldn't even handle anthrax, that they exposed their own workers because of lax measures, lax scientific method within the CDC. It kind of doesn't breed confidence when you know that they can't run their own shop. And now we're talking about a bio-level 4 virus, you know, one of the hottest viruses ever. And what I mean by hot means it infects people and it kills people very efficiently. You know, it's kind of hard to believe what they're saying because reality is not jibing with it. So the patient who got it readmitted, the doctor who was the OBGYN who got the virus from delivering a baby of a woman who was affected, they pronounced him healthy. I think he was in the hospital maybe a couple of weeks. I think he got a transfusion from the initial doctor who got admitted. I don't know if he got the experimental. Yes, he did. He got the experimental vaccine as well, or the drug. Well, he got readmitted a couple of days ago with fever. And now they have the production of that. I don't know if it's ZMAP or M. I think it's MMAP. They have stopped the production of it because now they say that it can cause a fever after use. Huh, really? Or did he get reinfected? We don't know. I mean, it's this black hole, and it makes you have to use conjecture because they just don't say anything.
Well, where was he reinfected? For some reason, missed that.
Yeah, in Massachusetts now. So he went from Nebraska now to Massachusetts. So, yeah, that would happen about 2 days ago. It's kind of a small little blurb on TV. not a big
small,
to-do.
That's, small
you have to
little
watch
blurb, huh?
Yeah. You have to watch things closely.
Okay, now they're saying that, and as I understand it, the vaccine that he was given, that's the extract, or it's done through tobacco. Is that correct?
Right, but they're planning on making it animal-born, or they're going to start using an animal base to it, which never, you know, it's not a good thing usually. I mean, a lot of these vaccines are cultured in animal culture medium. They use kidney cells from monkeys. They use mouse sometimes. They use a lot of different animal models. And, you know, we can look back to the polio vaccine initially, where they cultured it in monkey leukemia cells. That's a problem because once you incorporate the cell culture into the cell, it can take on the nature of the cell. So if you're talking about a monkey leukemia virus, and there's another book called Mary's Monkey, which people should read, and it talked about how the culture actually caused cancer in people. And you have to look at how the cancer rate has exploded from the people who, about the 50s and 60s. The cancer rate is crazy. And the people who got polio vaccines, maybe, you know, with a lot of sarcoma, a lot of soft tissue cancers that popped up all of a sudden. I don't know if it's safe. I mean, there's a question mark as to whether you can have these cultures grow and not have the disease affect humans because of mutations, because the DNA gets incorporated into the vaccine itself. It's scientifically questionable.
You know,
and they keep doing it.
That brings up a point. I was reading on Intravirus yesterday, and I didn't realize that it is a cousin to polio.
It is.
And that was the first sight, and haven't heard anybody else say that, but it was interesting reading.
It is interesting reading, and now we're seeing children who are having polio-like symptoms who have been infected with the enterovirus. Initially, it was just respiratory. Now I think there are about 7 or 8 children who've come down with polio-like symptoms, you know, partial paralysis, muscle weakness, etc. So a question is this virus now mutating? The longer a virus stays within a population with actively infecting people, the more likely a mutation is going to happen. You actually want a virus to burn out very quickly. That's where you see little change because it's the host, which is the human in this case. Once the host is no longer living, they can't pass it on to other people. That's unfortunately the best case scenario, and that's why Ebola wasn't talked about outside of Africa for the past several years because it popped up in small villages. It was never in major metropolitan centers. Maybe two or three people passed away from it, and then it was done. This is a completely different ballgame. This is a different animal altogether, not only because it's lasting longer and it's less deadly initially, it's because it's gone to major centers, major metropolitan centers, and because of this incubation period, they can carry the virus, not know it, get on various modes of transportation, and then crash out and pass it to other people. We just saw it in Dallas. We just saw it in Spain. That lady went on holiday, the nurse who took care of the priest, who cleaned his room, cleaned him, went on vacation after her exposure. So are those people quarantined? Are they looking at the people that she came in contact with? It's as if, I can't even explain it, but it's as if they're trying to have as many people exposed and potentially inoculated as possible. But for what end? And again, I mean, not a conspiracy theory. I'm just watching, and I'm just looking at what's going on. If the State Department just about a month ago bought, 150,000, 160,000 of these protective suits, why? You know, what's going on there? We've seen, all these various departments are buying bullets. Remember that story that's been going on for the past couple of years? Why? You know, why would the NOAA and other people, departments which are not known to be, part of the policing system of our country, they're all armed to the teeth. Doesn't make sense to me.
Why?
But maybe now it does.
Why in Madison, Georgia, do we have thousands of three-deep caskets?
Yeah, I remember that story, too. That came out maybe about 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's like everybody's being preparing for the worst-case scenario. And are we trying to ferment the worst-case scenario? You know, what's going on with that? And I think we just need to not play this game. Make sure that you handle your business and protect yourself. If it does come down, this is, a strategy that people may want to follow. If an Ebola outbreak happens in New York City, and you get more than one person, not like Dallas, right? There's one person right now. We're in a holding pattern. But if this starts to break out in a city where there are 5 or 10 people that are infected, you probably should start to initiate your own self-quarantine strategy. And that's where having your 21-day supply or a month supply, 6 week, the longer the better, frankly, of food, water, and the supplies you need to survive in your house where you stay in without having to leave for a period of time. It's a safety mechanism, one, because if martial law does break out or people start to panic and start to go for the supplies that they didn't collect, they're coming for you. So ultimately, you need to stay in your home and protect your home and your property and your family.
That's important. You and Dr. Orient last week made a very good point that, if it's one, quote-unquote, one patient with Ebola, that's one scenario. Yes, a hospital can probably handle it. Mm-hmm. But once it goes from one to two or two to four, all of a sudden the multiple, exponentially, it can go anywhere. It will become an epidemic and quickly and can spread, like you said, like wildfire. And then it won't be controlled. There aren't the facilities to control it.
There isn't. And that's where the Marshall part of it comes in. They'll control it by, putting in, where you can't leave your home after dark. I'm sure I'm drawing a blank on the name of that. But the police will step in to enforce it. And they may have orders to shoot because they're trying to corral the system or corral the anybody who potentially can come out of this quarantine zone. They will make sure that you can't do it. And that's exactly what's going on in Liberia and in Sierra Leone. When they lock down a country and they tell you that 2 million people are quarantined, they're not joking. They're not leaving the borders. They're not leaving their homes in some instances, and they're enforcing it with police. That's strategy that they're going to use. So the best case scenario is that you don't have to leave your home and be subjected to that. That's a very important strategy. Second would be to have a really good supply of supplements, vitamin D, zinc, selenium, vitamin C. These are all reasonably priced. You need to have them in your home. Even some people believe that colloidal silver is another really good antiviral strategy. It's not a cure, but what it does, it's been shown to prevent virus from attaching and getting into the cell, and that's how Ebola kills you. It actually attacks the cell, takes it over, produces more copies of itself, and then goes from cell to cell throughout the entire body doing that. So if you take something like colloidal silver, it'll prevent the attachment and the ability for the virus to enter a cell. That's how it works. So having that on hand would go a long way to helping you prevent it.
Let me ask, would this be true, obviously the common, quote-unquote, common flu is a virus as well, mm-hmm. So will the same procedures help with other ailments besides just Ebola?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, instead of taking a flu shot, why don't you load up on vitamin D and vitamin C and the rest of the things I just mentioned so you don't get it? I mean, I think it's a lot more successful than taking a flu vaccine. And for the people who believe that it doesn't mutate very easily, just look at the flu vaccine itself. Every year that they create this, there's other strains that come online that it's no longer going to work against. And that's just a flu virus. Ebola virus is a lot more efficient, you know, and it's already mutated hundreds of times. Why would anybody believe that a vaccine that they create would actually work against it? The same thing with HIV. They've been unable to create a vaccine because it mutates so quickly. So I wouldn't hang my hat on waiting for a vaccine to come down the line to help me. I just don't think it's logical, knowing how the typical vaccines against these kind of viruses work. They've not been able to create an HIV vaccine. They haven't been able to create a flu vaccine that covers everything for the year that you're going to take it. And now they expect you to believe that they're going to create this fabulous Ebola vaccine, and it's going to be 100% effective. One thing that you do know, I can't say, is that it's going to be experimental. So if you do, they come out with this, they're not going to have any long-term studies. They're not going to have a control and a population who has it to compare whether or not it's really effective. They're just going to put it out there. And I'm not sure I want to take something like that that's untested. And if they grow it in animal culture, then potentially it might cause the virus instead of trying to prevent it. I think it's much safer in a plant, using a plant as the base for it, than an animal culture medium. I just don't trust that. So there's a lot of things that are unknowns and are variables, and I think people need to use a strategy that takes that into consideration, not wait for the shoe to drop before they start to activate themselves. These are all things that we talked about on the show. They're really reasonably priced that you can do, that you can set up. And I have to say, no matter what it is, from the time you were a kid taking a test in school to now, if you're prepared for something, you don't get anxious. You don't get fearful. You get it done.
Well,
that's what people need to do.
We need to take a break, and we'll be back right after this with Medicine on Call. We'll talk about one other thing that we've passed up. We'll be right back.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Have you heard of quantitative fluid analysis? Commonly called QFA, this test assesses your body at a cellular level and gives insight into your illness. Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center offers the QFA, an FDA-approved test that can often provide early diagnosis of conditions before they can be detected with other tests. Dr. Elena George believes in an integrative approach to medicine. She believes in treating the problem and not the symptom. Following a review of your results, Dr. George will suggest treatment approaches such as nutritional counseling and/or the use of pharmaceutical-grade enzymes and nutritional supplements. Surgery and prescription medication will be recommended only when necessary. Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center is located in Atlanta at 1776 Peachtree Road Northwest in Suite 260 North Tower, two blocks south of Piedmont Hospital. They are open Monday through Friday, 8:30 a.m. until 4 p.m. Additional details are available at www.peachtreeentcenter.com. Call their office at 404-591-9100 to make an appointment and mention that you heard this ad on Radio Sandy Springs and get 10% off of QFA testing.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. You know, I've subscribed to being prepared.
That was something I was going to say too, Dr. George, and it's not my place to say it. You know a whole lot more than I do, but people need to think and they need to get good rest. You know.
Absolutely. I forgot about that. Sleep. I mean, getting an excellent quality sleep. I mean, 8 hours is what most people should have, but everybody's biological clock is slightly different. So I would say estimate from 6 to 8 hours would be a pretty reasonable time frame to get. 2 and 3, 4 hours a night is not enough to help your immune system ramp up. That's key. I forgot about that. And also washing your hands with soap and water, as opposed to the alcohol-based washes that people are using, where they just kind of just, you know, take the gel and just rub their hands in it. One, there's a question as to whether it affects your endocrine system, because it can make you, it can feminize people. It raises the estrogen, changes the hormonal balance, basically. And two, when you use alcohol, it actually opens the pores a little bit, so you actually may make your skin more permeable. So I don't really use that. I mean, the old-fashioned works. Soap and water actually works quite well. Bleach, having that on hand is really key, because that does kill the Ebola virus, pretty much any virus. So having that, cleaning your house with bleach and water instead of some of these antibacterials and antibacterial soaps and antibacterial cleaning agents, they're not as effective as they used to be. And going back to basics may be a much better way and a cheaper way to actually sanitize your house. I think we covered Ebola pretty well. It's time for people to stop, get out of the bubble. While we have an internet, you need to go on it and start reading for yourself. Anything that I say, I don't expect you to take with as gospel. I expect you to go and do your own due diligence, just like I do. And now it's time to go outside of the mainstream bubble and actually get information, because they're telling total falsehoods at this point. You know, don't protect yourself is what they're saying, because you don't have to. That's crazy. That doesn't make any sense from a public health perspective. You want an informed population who's able to individually protect themselves and their family. That, by definition, makes the public health system work better. When you have people lined up in stadiums because they can't, for whatever reason, they can't take care of themselves in their home, that's a recipe for disaster. It just is. There's nobody who can tell me that it's better for thousands of people to push and shove, fight for resources, when they could be home and covered and protected for at least a month. I mean, I think a good rule of thumb is to have a month's supply for 4 people. You know, that's a reasonable thing. You can actually go online, buy food that's freeze-dried or prepared in such a way that it lasts for 25 years. You need to have protective gear. You need to have a plan to get out of the city if you need to. All these things are important. If you're prepared, then you don't end up becoming a statistic. That's all I'm saying. It's not about fear. It's about protection. Now, as far as let's switch gears and talk about Obamacare and the short time that we have left. On the front line of this, seeing patients who come in with this health insurance, if you really want to call it that, it's affected everything. This is the tragedy of Obamacare. To cover 5 million people, they've destroyed the health care delivery system of everybody. This is a completely different system that we now work in as doctors and nurses. It's not about health care anymore. It's about capturing information, about making sure you follow a protocol. Dr. Orient said last week, and I've seen it personally now, where if somebody is ill, but they don't have a life-threatening illness, they don't have cancer, they're not end stage, they're now entering up in hospice, in palliative care, where they're just made comfortable, that they're not being treated in a way that can help them survive, because it costs money. And it happened to somebody that I know, somebody that I love. Her dad entered the system, just had a heart attack. He survived the heart attack, survived the surgery, ended up with a lung issue. And instead of them putting in a bleeding tube called a tracheostomy to help him breathe, they didn't. They took him off the ventilator, and he struggled to breathe, ended up never being mobilized. They talked about hospice at the very beginning instead of tracheostomy, which I totally didn't understand, since his heart was fine after it was miraculous. He's actually survived, and the cardiologist signed off on him. Unbelievable. And he ended up dying of a lung issue. As a matter of fact, they put in some sort of feeding tube that went into his lung, and so he aspirated that, and that's what killed him in a hospital setting. That's how the system works now. It's almost like a slow kill. You know, if you're not viable, or they perceive you not to be viable, or you have multiple medical problems that are going to cost the system too much money, they're not going to do heroic measures, and it's going to be very subtle. And unless the family is very aggressive about saying, I want this for my family member, you're going to do it, they're not going to. And it's a very subtle change, and they don't communicate well with the family. They just do things now. I mean, if you walk into a hospital that's vaccine city, they're going to shoot you up with flu vaccine, maybe, you know, hepatitis B vaccine. If you're not up to date on your vaccines, they will make sure that you're up to date. It's all about capturing that information. It's unbelievable. And it's not cheaper. That's the problem. And under the system, the hospitals have gotten very smart. Every single city that I've worked in or really looked at, the healthcare delivery has changed. There's huge hospitals who now own a piece. Now in Georgia, for example, there used to be something called Well Street Urgent Cares. Well, they're now incorporated into the major hospital system in our city. That's happening all over. They're now self-funding their insurance. So they have, for example, you know, Piedmont and WellStar now have their own insurance, and they insure their own employees, and they actively look for patients to enter their system. Once you enter it, you can't use it for any other hospital. You have to go to those centers. So they're capturing the healthcare dollar, but we're finding that it's just as expensive for the patient as it is with Blue Cross or anything else. And for an employee, the deductibles are so high, they can't even afford to go to their own hospitals to get care. So this is about another way of capturing the healthcare dollar. It's mercenary, it's brilliant, and it looks like they're trying to help you, but ultimately they're pricing you out just like the regular commercial insurance companies are. And I don't know if you heard this, Dave, but Walmart is dropping health care coverage for their part-time employees.
Mm-hmm.
So this is all a move towards making people dump them into the Affordable Care Act system, into these exchanges. They're going to fill them up by hook or crook. First, they did it voluntarily last year. Now it's going to be that you have nowhere else to go. At least they're going to try to make it that way. And it's sick,
you know,
honestly.
If you back off and just what you were saying, just what this whole show has been about, you back off and take a look at it, they're trying to kill us. And I'm not sure who they are particularly, but you look at all the factors. You look at Ebola. You look at the intravirus. By the way, the word is curfew.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Anyway, you look at all of this. You look at the healthcare system. You look at the money that it costs. They ruin you if you go into an emergency room setting and then into a hospital, and you go in for observation, so then your insurance doesn't count unless you're there for treatment.
Correct.
I mean, this is like a conspiracy to, you know, you said it earlier in the show, to kill off a large part of the population. You come out of the hospital after being there for 4 or 5 days under observation, and you owe them $100,000, $200,000. What are you going to do?
Well, you know, if you don't, is designed to make you feel like you're powerless. I mean, if you owe, there's nothing worse than having a huge bill that you owe. There's nothing worse than that. I mean, you can't sleep. You can't function. All you know is you have this big thing hanging over your head. It makes you non-productive, and it makes you compliant. You're not interested in voting in an election when you're thinking about where am I going to get my money from to pay this bill and eat at the same time or pay for my rent. That's what you're focused on. It's survival. And all these people who are in power get to stay there because you're distracted. I say stop playing the game. In terms of the healthcare system, opt out of that. They're trying to strangle the free market system in healthcare, but it's not working because there are doctors, there are urgent cares, there are labs, there are parallel and better healthcare delivery system out there that takes fee for service. It's cash based, and I just joined as a member of Liberty HealthShare. And that, to me, is the option, that a strategy, again, that you can use to opt out of this mercenary system that's designed to just drain your pocketbook, tell you that it's, you know, you should just be happy with the life that you live. It's now time to go. If you listen to Ezekiel Emanuel, the magic number is 75. Nothing should be done for you after that age, because why would you want to live anyway? That's the mindset. The flip side of this is to start putting value in yourself. You now have to decide, I'm worthy. When you make that decision, you realize, I'm not going to settle for someone to superimpose what they think my worth is on me. They don't think you're worth anything. They have no respect for us in any venue, whether it's a school-age child, a worker, a small business owner. They don't care. American, they don't care. They want you to shut up and sit down and just do what they want.
We're too dumb to make our own decisions.
Well, that's what they think, but we're not. And I'm not going to go along with the crowd. I'm very proud to be an individual. So anything I can do personally, and I counsel my patients the same thing, same way. Anybody that I know and love, I need to let them know about this, because it's a way to take your power back. The medical cost-sharing model is allowed. It's part of the healthcare law. Nobody says this enough. It's not something that's novel. It's been around for years. Liberty HealthShare, I think, is, what, over 20 years, 15, 20 years old, for example. If you decide that you want to do a co-op, medical cost-sharing is basically like a co-op with everybody like-minded across the country, pooling your resources. And they have an amazing system that allows people to, with one investment per month, anything from $125 if you're under 30 as a minimum, to $199 per month, to invest that so that you have peace of mind when you need it. So there's nobody going to tell you that, hey, you can't have that surgery, you can't have that procedure, you can't have that lab because it costs too much or because we deem you not worthy. You get what you deserve when it's covered under this health sharing system. That's pregnancy. That's having a pre-existing condition. They only turn away 3% of the people who apply. That's pretty amazing. That's probably better. It is better than the commercial insurance. I'm now in a position now that I can't take care of my patients who have commercial insurance because they can't afford it. I've had, last week, we lost about 5 people at the front desk and people who called in because they realized that their deductible had to be met before the insurance would kick in. So we have people with $1,500, $2,500, $5,000 deductibles, and they have to eat that before the insurance starts to work. Well, I mean, one woman came in, was ready to pay it, then realized she had to pay it, you know, her portion of her deductible, and said, well, I think I'm going to be fine, and just left. And she's not. This is how they're saying that the healthcare costs are decreasing. Again, it's a lie. It's because people can't afford to use it. That's why the healthcare costs are decreased. So if people would go to libertyoncall.com and start, just do your due diligence, look at that. Use things like Aflac, the supplemental. You'll actually start to be paid to stay healthy instead of draining your pocketbook.
Dr. George, I got to interrupt you. We're out of time. It has gone by very quickly. Let's take this up some more next week as well.
Definitely. Thank you for listening to Medicine on Call.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.